This presentation has been previously broadcast.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show. The number is 888-914-9149. That's an indispensable piece of information for you right there, because that's the easiest way for me to communicate with you. You could shout really loudly, but I wouldn't hear you. But if you call me, we can talk. 888-914-9149. You know that I like classic rock. I like rock in general. But there's a different rock, happens to be, or was anyway, at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, a large boulder, different kind of rock. And it was removed, an article by Amanda Prestigiomico in the Daily Wire. A large boulder was removed from the University of Wisconsin-Madison after the Black Student Union and other racial justice activists complained about it being a racist monument. Now, this is just a huge boulder. That's all it is. It's not a monument. It's not a statue. It's courtesy of Mother Nature. Big old rock. And what makes the rock allegedly racist, in the minds of some anyway, is that in the 1920s, a journalist once used a racist term to describe the large boulder. That's all. Had no connection with the school, no connection with anything else, going back 100 years ago, because some journalist decided to use a racial epithet to describe the rock.
Ooh, I don't want that on my karmic record.
No, I really don't.
It's too late. It's already on your karmic record. The journalist, whoever the journalist is, actually, we'll get to that. The rock's existence has apparently been oppressing students ever since. The racism of the rock, as claimed by activist students, is known as Chamberlain Rock. It rested atop Observatory Hill. It's named after a 19th century geologist and former president of the university, Thomas Crowder Chamberlain.
This can't be real.
It is real.
No, this is like an onion story.
That's why I'm starting
this
with this.
This is not real.
I want to get it out of the way.
Are you kidding?
How did you like my transition from classic rock to this rock?
A racist rock?
It's a rock, yeah, and it's racist.
What?
I know. Well, the same people say that black holes, quasars, is racist also. They say stuff like that.
All right, well, here you go.
Okay, yeah, thank you. Glenn Leverent, thank you. Give me some more. Glenn Leverent knew that I would need some of this today. All right. Does that look okay?
No, but it might help.
I hope it holds. My cranium will explode. So let me get back to the essence of this. Chamberlain Rock, which rests atop Observatory Hill, is named after a 19th century geologist and former university president, Thomas Crowder Chamberlain, whose work centered on glacial deposits, according to a bio on the university's website. But it was a reporter's reference to the rock 100 years ago in the Wisconsin State Journal article that prompted the push for its removal. Nobody was bothered by this for nearly 100 years until now. In October 1925, the university had the boulder excavated and placed prominently atop the hill to honor Chamberlain, who would die in Chicago 3 years later. The rock was a rare specimen believed to be more than 2 billion years old. And before it was installed on Observatory Hill, only about a foot and a half of it was visible above the ground, according to the article. It was believed to have been carried by glaciers from Canada to Wisconsin. That's when we had open borders. In the 1920s, a slang term used to describe large dark rocks, including the N-word, was used in an article by a journalist who had nothing to do with the school other than the fact that he wrote an article about the rock. That's it. University researchers did not uncover any other instances in print where the rock was referred to with this word, but they said the KKK was active on campus at the time of the rock's dedication, according to an article in the same newspaper published earlier this week. And that's it. That's the whole extent of it. And so the rock is deemed to be racist or a racist monument, so now it's gone. You see how it works, Cyrus? You have to learn the rules of how this works nowadays.
If you disobey the rules,
you will get cut off. Let me give you some more, as long as we're at it. 888-914-9149. Now we're going to go down to Atlanta. An Atlanta public elementary school principal Here's an article by Chrissy Clark. We'll get a link to these articles for you so you can read them for yourselves. An Atlanta public elementary school principal told a Catholic couple that their child would need to leave the district in order to avoid the child learning about LGBTQ plus issues at the age of, can you guess how old, Cyrus? 5.
No.
Yeah. Because all 5-year-olds need to know about that stuff, don't they? They need to know how to, they need to know how condoms work at the age of 5, if not younger.
This makes me ill.
I know. Yeah. Okay, well, prepare yourself. An Atlanta couple, and as I mentioned, they're Catholic. They wish to remain anonymous for fear of retribution. Because don't you know, the people who are all about diversity and tolerance, they're the most non-diverse and intolerant people of all, if you dare to cross them. So I think this family is wise to want to remain anonymous. They obtained a copy of their child's incoming teacher's Amazon classroom wish list. The parents were startled by several of the books, many of which reference sexual orientation, transgenderism, and progressive ideology.
5-year-old.
Five. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, sorry.
I'm with you. I'm commiserating with you. And they give some examples of the books. I don't want to give the books any extra attention, so I'm not going to mention the names of the book. One of them tells the story of a gay couple. Another one discusses transgenderism from the standpoint of a child who considers himself transgender. Another one is a book that encourages children to view the classroom instead of their parents as the source of their support. That book, by the way, I'll just say the name of that book because it's so egregious. Our Class is a Family. And although I have not read the book, I've read many books in my life, but I haven't read that book. And in that book, apparently it encourages your child to believe that it's the classroom, the teacher, the class, that's your source of support, not your parents. Because remember yesterday, we had a couple of callers who were talking about when you're 13 years old, it's time now that your mom and dad are not allowed to be in the doctor's office with you if you're getting an exam. Mom and dad can wait outside until they're allowed to come in. And in the meantime, the child goes in alone with the physician and or the nurse and is questioned about things going on in the home. And do you want the Gardasil vaccination so you don't get, quote unquote, cancer? That has to do with cervical cancer, by the way. But I digress. So the same kindergarten teacher posted pictures on her public Twitter account promoting progressive and quote unquote, so-called anti-racist ideology. In one picture, the teacher can be seen wearing a T-shirt that reads anti-racist. In another, the teacher posted a photo of her coffee on a table alongside a copy of the controversial book, How to Be an Anti-Racist. The family opted to contact Morningside Elementary School principal Audrey Sofianos in hope of switching their child to a classroom that would not present such topics to 5-year-olds. The father wrote in an email to Sofianos, he says, "We feel it would be best for both you and our family if," the name of the child, "was moved to another classroom that could be more accommodating towards our concerns regarding the book topics." This is so outrageous and inflammatory how he's saying it, isn't it? Of course not. He's a study in calm and reasonability. He says, is reasonability even a word? I don't know if it's a word, but it sounded like a good word. "We believe in accepting," this is the father in his email, "we believe in accepting all people and want all children to feel welcome in school, but believe that there are ways to do that without reading books explicitly celebrating any specific lifestyle or belief, whether it be the lifestyles, beliefs we share," and I presume he's referring to their Catholic faith, "or ones we disagree with. We cannot sacrifice our religious beliefs and we'll have to find an alternative even this late in the process." Very reasonable. According to emails reviewed by the Daily Wire, where this is published, the principal said that the books follow Georgia curriculum standards. In a later, Cyrus, can you hand me some more duct tape, please?
No kidding.
This is starting to bulge. I mean, the cranium is trying to explode.
I can't take much more of this.
Do we have enough?
I know.
How does he do it with a Scottish accent? I can't do it, Captain. I can't even do it.
I can't even.
I'm not even sure what that was.
Nope. it was great.
I better leave off the Star Trek impersonations. All right. Where was I? Oh, okay. So the principal said that the books follow the Georgia curriculum standards. In a later phone conversation, Sofiano said the books are not explicitly part of the school's curriculum, but are available for students and teachers to read as part of the classroom library. Sofiano said that if the Catholic parents wish to uphold their traditional values, switching classrooms will not quell their fears as the district promotes this agenda in every classroom. I want you and your family to be a part of, and I hear some keyboard keys clicking. I don't know where that's coming from.
Oh, that's me. Sorry.
Oh, is that you? Okay. You're ordering more duct tape on Amazon, aren't you? Because we're running out of duct tape. I'm almost done. I promise you. It's almost like the dentist telling you that, you know, this procedure on your tooth with all the drilling will be over soon. Not soon enough, but soon. I want you and your family. This is what Sofianos wrote back to the Catholic parents. I want you and your family to be part of Morningside because it's an amazing school. But the reality is, we are a school that does represent everybody, except for you. And the reason the teacher has a book collection is to pull out a book when the topic is appropriate, with the spirit of everyone feeling like they belong, including your child. It doesn't matter what class your child is in. It doesn't, because these types of books will be read at our school.
God, Captain, if I push it.
Get it together, Cyrus. The principal went on to say that learning about gender and sexual orientation does not begin at any given age. Instead, it is presented as a K-12 thing. She proceeded to cite the district's equity policy and reminded the parents that the district has a Department of Equity and Social Justice. What is that? Sounds almost like a threat. And don't forget, we have a Department of Equity and Social Justice. Just don't forget, because they might come for you. The concerned parents told the Daily Wire that they live in a liberal area and have many LGBTQ+ neighbors. The duo said that they plan on introducing these concepts to their children, though they feel the topic is inappropriate for a five-year-old, to learn in a taxpayer-funded school. Pushing progressive ideology appears to be a theme in Atlanta public schools. According to a local news outlet, a parent at Mary Lynn Elementary School filed a complaint after she uncovered the classrooms were segregated based on race. See, they want to drag you back into segregation again. These same nonsensical maniacs who wear anti-racist T-shirts and tout their anti-racism and probably tell you what their pronouns are in their social media profiles, these people want segregation again. All right, I'm done. But there's more. Wait, there's more. You ready? I know we're out of duct tape, Cyrus, so we're going to have to go it alone on this one. The largest teachers union in the country, an article by Hank Berrien, the largest teachers union in the country has filed a lawsuit against a Rhode Island mom to block her numerous requests for public records regarding her school district and critical race theory, prompting her to fire back. I just got served with a lawsuit from the teachers union, NEARI, throwing down the gauntlet, are we? Game on. Her name is Nicole Salas. She started this odyssey in challenging the school district back in April, continuing by writing, "Today the teacher union NEA filed another lawsuit against me." This is a mom. This is like a soccer mom baking brownies for the kids when they come home, and she's just trying to find out what's going on in the classroom. And so the teachers union is coming after her. Not just one, by the way. The largest teachers union in the country are filing lawsuits now against this mom simply because she wants to monitor what's going on in the classroom, because she has an obligation to her child to make sure that the child is not being indoctrinated, for lack of a better term. So she says, "Today the teacher union NEA filed another lawsuit against me, this time a temporary restraining order and a preliminary injunction. Will teacher unions bully moms? Will they do this as an everyday thing now?" By the way, I would have to check. Is it teachers union or teacher unions or teachers unions? I think it's the third. The Goldwater Institute's In Defense of Liberty blog explained, in April, Nicole emailed the principal of her school in the South Kingston School District asking for the kindergarten curriculum and whether it would include teaching children politically charged materials, including those influenced by critical race theory and gender theory, holding them out to be true. She immediately faced stonewalling from the school and even a threat of legal action for asking too many questions. Ultimately, Nicole received a bill for $74,000 to fulfill a public records request filed by the Goldwater Institute on her behalf in July. Mrs. Solis stated, the NEA is so determined to push its political agenda that they are willing to expose themselves in a court of law for who they really are, an association of bullies, eager to challenge a stay-at-home mom who simply wanted to know what her daughter would be taught. This lawsuit won't deter me from asking questions. I encourage all parents to do the same so that they are empowered to make informed decisions regarding their children's education. One of the attorneys defending her says, this brazen and unprecedented act of intimidation by the NEA, that's the teachers union, keep in mind, will not stand. Sounds like George H.W. Bush. This will not stand. But I hope it doesn't. Nicole Solis is entitled to know what her daughter's school is teaching in the classroom. She's entitled to ask questions, and she does not deserve to face legal action just for asking questions any concerned parent would ask. So there's more. I mean, it gets into the specifics and some of the arguments that were made by the teachers union, what they say, what she said, about the back and forth. But on the face of it, it's just absurd that, number one, well, it's absurd that they're teaching this stuff in the schools anyway. But it's doubly absurd that this poor mother is now being, as the article says, bullied and harassed, or as CNN liked to pronounce it back in the 80s, harassed. Remember when that was the big thing? They would also say Nicaragua. You know, people who couldn't speak Spanish to save their own lives, suddenly they have this perfect pronunciation, Nicaragua. I'm ready to cleanse my... No, I'm not. I take that back. I do have one more. Let's get it all out, okay?
Another one?
It's like lancing a boil. We got to get all...
Banging my head against the wall.
I know. But let me get all of this out of the way. Then we can take a break, and then we can cleanse our palate and start fresh, okay? Good. I have to get to some of the stuff. Because, Cyrus, as you know, I mean, you're a dad, you're a parent. Parents all around the country... their children, to greater or lesser extents, are running into these sharp edges of ideology. And we don't want the kids hurt, and we want the parents to know what's going on. So these are related kinds of stories that hopefully will raise awareness and be that much more motivating for parents to be vigilant about their children. So here's one more, then I promise you we're done with this for the day. Well, at least for the hour. This is from National Review. Texas judge has granted full custody of 8-year-old James Younger to his mother, who has fought publicly, you ready, to transition her son into a girl against the father's wishes. Judge Mary Brown granted full custody to Ann Gorgulis. I don't know if she pronounces it Gorgulis, I'm not sure, G-E-O-R-G-U-L-A-S. Full custody to her in a court order on Tuesday, awarding the mother exclusive control over James's primary residence, counseling, medications, education, and extracurricular activities. Keep in mind, this child is 8 years old. It allows her to withhold information from his father, Jeff Younger, James's father, regarding, and these are the things that she can keep him in the dark about. His son's extracurricular activities, school functions, school enrollment, counseling, and medical care. The dad is not allowed to know anything about those things if Ann Gorgulis has her way. And she got her way because the court backed her up. However, while Gorgulis has the exclusive right to consent to James's medical procedures, the order notes that the power does not extend to hormone suppression therapy, puberty blockers, or transgender reassignment surgery. The high-profile custody case has played out publicly for years as Gorgulis has insisted that her son identifies as a girl named Luna. Younger has disagreed, that's the father, saying that James chooses to present himself as a boy at his house, even though he keeps feminine clothes in his son's closet as an option. Gorgulis, for her part, claims that James chose the name Luna after expressing the desire to be a girl at a young age by showing a preference for female pronouns and Disney princesses. However, Younger, the father, argues that James's transgender status is contrived. He says in a video of James as a 3-year-old saying that mommy told him he was a girl. And that kind of fits with this pattern that I see here, this mother. Now she's got court-ordered child abuse piled on top of her own. I regard that to be child abuse. Instilling this idea in the mind of an unsuspecting, innocent 3-year-old boy telling him, you're really a girl. You're a girl. You're a girl. That's what's being alleged here. The court ruling says that Younger, this is the dad, failed to timely make the payments of child support. Somebody needs an editor. Medical support in interest as ordered and only paid his past due support after the motion for enforcement was filed. So it goes on and on from there. But the point is, you've got this mother who is hell-bent, and I use the term advisedly, hell-bent on pressurizing her son into being a girl.
What is going on?
Yeah. So that's what I got for you, Cyrus. That's what I got in that particular area. You feel ready to take a break? You look so ready. Cyrus isn't talking to me now because I don't know why. I'll find out. I'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app right after this.
Relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
And lest I forget, happy Taco Tuesday. And muchas enchiladas, everybody. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. We'll go now to Kelly in the Twin Cities. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, Patrick. I've called more than my share, probably, but I just want to encourage people after hearing these stories you were just speaking of, that we were, and our children, were made for such a time as these. Out of the blue, my 16-year-old let me know that she was up all night, couldn't sleep, and decided to write a 17-page article on fathers and men's rights being trampled now in the courts in America, and she wants to become a lawyer. She's taking extracurricular classes to, you know, on.
Is she in public school or Catholic school?
She switched herself because she was really frustrated with the public school. She went to Catholic school for elementary, then had to switch to the public school when the Catholic school closed.
When she wrote that 17-page letter, how did that go over? Was that submitted in the public school or in the Catholic school, and what was their reaction to it?
Not sure if she submitted that to her class. She enrolled herself in K-12 now, which I highly recommend to everybody I talk to. Mm-hmm. I really like K-12. I heard about it on your station from you, mm-hmm. Patrick, and she enrolled herself in that and for this year, and it's been fantastic. Straight A's, and she has, like I said, classes that she can take on legal things, which she wants to pursue becoming a lawyer.
Let me jump in, Kelly. The point that you made earlier, you know, we're made for such a time as this one, and I do agree with you certainly. But 5-year-olds were not made for a time like this. 5-year-olds are innocent little kids; they don't need to know about these things. It is stripping away their innocence, and it's wrong. And so, yes, you and I and the fine young lady that you're describing, yes, we should rise to the occasion because this is a great time to be a Catholic. It's a great time to speak the truth in love, but not 5-year-olds. They're not called to do that. And that's what I object
right,
to.
But my daughter will grow up and defend the fathers that are fighting for their sons.
That's great. And I'm happy to hear that. I really am, Kelly. So I'm not disagreeing with your thesis there. All I'm saying is that in the meantime, moms and dads with little kids in public schools need to wake up and see what's going on so that they can rescue these children from this indoctrination that they're receiving at the hands of the maniacs who are promoting this stuff in the schools.
I agree. We need to get back to those school board meetings. Us moms, you know, it's one thing to go fulfill yourself in your career, but don't forget to leave time for those school board meetings and know what you're kids are learning in school.
I agree.
Or get them the heck out of there. Like that book, you know, Get Out Now. Get your kids out of that public school. I mean, there's just, it's just
I'm not familiar with that book.
Deep mess.
Is there a book by that title, Get Out Now?
Yes, I think it's called Get Out Now.
I haven't seen it.
I heard about it on Relevant Radio.
It's okay. It's okay. I can look it up. But anyway, thanks for the tip on that, Kelly. I agree with you. We are made for times like this, but not five-year-olds. We have to shield them. And I'm glad you called, Kelly. Thank you. Let's go to John now in Chicago. Good morning, John.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah. I have a question. It says that Jesus sits at the right hand of the Father. Mm-hmm. Who's at the left hand of the Father?
It doesn't say.
Okay. We can't speak.
I'm not being glib. I'm not being glib. I guess I am. It's a figure of speech. And we have to remember that, of course, God himself as such, the triune God, does not have a body. So it's a figure of speech to help us lowly mortals understand in some sense what this means. So as St. Stephen saw himself in the book of Acts, he said that he saw in heaven that Christ was seated at the right hand of the Father. And he saw, I'm sure, that, but what exactly that looked like, I don't know. But it's a manner of speaking as to help us understand that Christ is there in heaven as God and man. And so sitting at the right hand of the Father was probably how it was revealed to St. Stephen so that he could comprehend this. Do you see what I mean? In other words, because God doesn't have a body, he doesn't have a right hand. He doesn't sit, you know. It's a figure of speech. Okay. I'm sure that's what St. Stephen saw. Like if an angel were to appear to you, John, an angel would appear in a form that you could comprehend. Usually it seems they appear in bodily form, looking somewhat like human beings, because we can understand that. But if you were to see an angel as an angel really is, well, first of all, you couldn't see him with your corporeal eyes unless God manifested him. But it wouldn't look to you like something intelligible, because angels also are pure spirits. So in Scripture, when we see an angel appear or a statement like that, Jesus sitting at the right hand of the Father, it's a way to express it so that we can understand it.
Okay. All right. There's also another conundrum here. Since God is all present, okay, that nothing exists outside of God, then hell must exist within God, right?
Okay, well, no. You're thinking, well, I shouldn't say that. I think you're thinking of the word omnipresent. And
right.
Okay, so his omnipresence is not a physical thing. Jesus is present sacramentally and substantially in the Holy Eucharist, but that's different from, say, how God is present everywhere. So no, hell is not present in God, because there is nothing in God but God. Everything else is outside of God. Everything else is external to God. Now, that doesn't mean that he can't be present everywhere in a certain sense, but it doesn't mean that you and I are living inside God, or that hell is inside God. There is no inside to God. God is a pure spirit and completely partless. There's no inside, no outside, no up, no down. And I know these categories are hard for us to imagine, but we know they're true with God. He's utterly simple. So there's no question about anything being inside him, certainly not a creature like hell. What do you think, John?
That's a hard one.
It is. I grant you that.
Just.
You know what, though? You'll like this book.
God,
check it out.
But God is infinity also. I mean,
true. Check this out, John. There's a great book that'll help expand your mind. It did to me. It's called Theology for Beginners by Frank Sheed.
Theology for Beginners?
Right, by Frank Sheed, Sheed. And that's the shorter book. It's more preliminary. And once you've read that book, then I would recommend Theology and Sanity by the same author. And the reason I do so is because you, like I and everyone else listening right now, these categories and these ideas, what does it mean for something to be utterly simple? No parts, no inside, no outside. That's the realm of spirit. And we know that God is pure spirit, but it's hard for us to imagine that because, well, we really can't imagine it because there's nothing in nature that we see and experience that's like that. So we have to use some mental muscles to get to where we can understand it without being able to visualize it. And that's what these books will do to help you. I guarantee.
Nothing.
I think you had a second question. What was that one, John?
Yeah, well, all right. Going back to this hell within God. God is everywhere, right?
Yes, but not in the sense that I think you think of it. So, like, God is not sitting on your shoulder right now.
No.
God's presence
is
not.
The space that I'm living in, God is present.
In a sense, yes.
In a sense. What do you mean by that?
Okay, well, let me try
to
put this
on. He is or isn't, right?
No, he is, but not in the spatial sense that I think you're thinking in. So you have a soul, okay? Your soul is in your body. It's inside you. It's located in a specific place. Your soul, even though it's a pure spirit itself, it's located in a place. So it's located inside your body. It's not on the table across the room. It's in you, okay? So you are localized. You are in this place here and now, and you are present here in a way that involves, because you have a body, it involves space and time. God's presence is not like that. So God is not present in the room with you right now in the way that your soul is. Even though being outside of the universe, outside of time and space, he sees everything, he's aware of everything, he influences everything. And that's another way that God is present to us, is through his influence. He doesn't have to be located in the room with you to be present in that sense. So it's in that sense that God is present, but it would be incorrect to think of him as like in the same room with you at that time, the way your soul is in your body.
Okay.
I don't mean.
So then where is hell?
Is it
outside of God?
Yeah.
And if something is outside of God, then he's not omnipresent. He must be there also.
Yes. Think of it this way. If you are you a father of children?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's say that you and your wife leave to go out to dinner, and you tell your kids, here's what we want done while we're gone. And you're gone. You're not physically present at the house. You're sitting at the restaurant with your wife, but your presence is still there in the house in the form of your instructions to your kids. Your authority is there. They know that you'll be coming home and you'll expect them to have done what you asked them to do. They know that they can't do certain things while you're gone. So there's one analogous way in which somebody's presence can still be there. Angels are another example. Jesus, when he talks about the guardian angels, he says that, I tell you, each of these children has an angel who beholds God's face in heaven. So as Catholics, we recognize that the angels are in heaven, seeing God face to face. It's not like they get sent down to earth and they have to do some stuff and then they go back up to heaven. They're always in heaven, but their influence can be made present in our lives, in this room, for example. Their presence can be made, they can be made present, is what I'm trying to say, in a way that's different from how we are. What you're thinking of is how you and I are present, where you go to a place and you're there. That's not how God works. That's not how the angels work. We do, because we're in bodies, but they're pure spirits, so they don't have those limitations. So I tell you what, I hope this call hasn't done more to confuse you. And if it has, please forgive me. But I do think that Frank Sheed can help in this regard, and that those books will
this out. All right. I could be here, but my mind could be thinking of, I don't know, Paris or something else, even though I'm not there. Okay. The mind is something that can grasp another place, right? What are you trying to say to me?
Yeah. So take the Hubble telescope. So if you look at through the Hubble telescope or see the images that it gives us, you're seeing things that are billions of light years away. And in a sense, you're there because you can see them. Now, you're still here, but you're seeing something that's incredibly far away. you're not physically present there, but in a sense, you are present there because you're viewing that thing, which is mind-blowing to me. And there are ways in which we can talk about the presence of God. All I'm saying simply is don't think of God's presence the way you and I are present as creatures in time and space. That's not how God is present. He's outside of all that. John, this was one of the A-plus phone calls this week, and I thank you for that. I love talking about these issues, and I hope this helped you a little bit. Do read those books, though. I think you'll find them very helpful. I'll be right back.
Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and RelevantRadio.com.
Cyrus, I conducted a thought experiment yesterday. Actually, two. I posted a big sign, I guess you'd call it. And
yes, I think I know what you're talking about.
Okay, it's all in block letters.
I had to read it three times because I was like, what is he doing? Yeah. What are you doing?
Oh, so when you first saw that, what was your first impression?
I thought you were trolling. And I guess you were, in a sense. But
this is my thought experiment.
Yeah.
So when you first read it and you didn't read it closely, what did you think it said?
I'm going off memory here, but I'm fully...
No. Okay. Now, if you don't look at it closely... Well, first let me tell you what it does say. It says, I support mandatory vacations.
That's not what it looks like. No.
When you look at it, if you don't look at it clearly, if you stop reading after VAC... Your mind tricks you into thinking it says, I support mandatory vaccinations.
And I would have swore that's what it said. I mean, I read it twice all the way through. I'm like, what is he doing?
Why is he doing this?
So I read it again. And the only reason I read it three times is because it was you. And I was trying to figure out what you're doing. And then I was like, oh, he got me again.
I got to share with you a couple of comments. So, I mean, I got a bunch of people who were angry with me. Like one guy says, you lost me. I won't support you ever again. I can't believe you're saying this.
Oh, no.
Another guy says, boo, ye of little faith. If God wants you to be sick, you'll be sick. If God wants you to be healthy, you will be healthy. It's his plan.
What's that have to do with vacations?
I know. So I said, boo, ye of little focus. Kindly reread my post. Oh, it was funny. And just the indignant reactions that some people had to this. I think a few people may have deleted them.
Oh, did anybody get back and like, oh, okay, you got me?
A couple did.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, so here's one guy who says, we should never be forced to put something in our body, especially something with limited testing and unknown long-term impacts. And I got back to him. I said, you didn't read my post before commenting on it, right? So anyway, I just thought it was funny.
That's fun. Having fun on Twitter.
Yeah, mine as well, right?
Then
there's another video on Twitter. This is just amazing in a bad way. There's this woman walking her dog. Let me see if I can give you a little bit of this here. Let's see.
You're taking my property.
Okay, that one. When you look at this, she's just like out walking her dog, and the guy who owns the house comes out because she's taking stuff out of his mailbox, which is illegal. And she's saying, there's just too much activity going on around here. There's all kinds of stuff, people coming and going, and you're getting packages. And I'm just taking this because I'm going to find out what you're up to. He says, you can't take my package. And so then she starts spraying him with like a spray bottle of some sort. And then he grabs his package out of her hand and she, you know, play acting, falls to the ground and she's, oh, you're trying to kill me and all this stuff. Thankfully, he filmed all of it.
I just watched. This is hilarious.
Isn't it?
Oh, I did not know you posted this. This is worth checking out.
And it really is. So my caption is, they walk among us. You know, people that you would pass by in the grocery store without imagining they could be that ridiculous.
She looks like a normal woman.
Yes, she does.
What is she up to?
She's got that pink spray bottle. I wonder what was in that.
Ah, weird. So,
yeah. Okay, so those are some treats we have available for you on my Twitter feed, at Patrick Madrid. Let's go to Cindy in Dallas. Good morning, Cindy. Welcome.
Good morning. I'm going to ask a brief question, and then I'll get off. I don't understand what's happened. How long have we been asleep, you know, to all these agendas being all of a sudden just shoved on us?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the school, LGBT, and all of these agendas. Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome. Now, you don't have to go. You don't have to rush off. If you'd rather stay on the line, you're welcome to do so. It's up to you.
Okay.
I couldn't, like, date it for you. I don't know that I could say it happened on this date. It's been a gradual process, and, I mean, I think a lot of factors have come into play over time, political factors, ideological factors. So let's go back to, so when I was a kid in grammar school, and as I said before, much of the time, maybe most of the time, my parents had the money for us to be able to go to Catholic school. And that was usually only because the parish would subsidize it and like the third kid goes free kind of thing. But whatever. So I did have a few years here or there where I was in public school. And I remember being in public school for a year or two in the 60s. So this would be like mid to late 60s, 67, 68. And I remember there being a Ten Commandments poster in the classroom. I remember there was even prayer, maybe early on. But my impression is that things started to slip away at that point. So prayer in school, from a legal standpoint, from a court ruling standpoint, that became verboten. And things like having the Ten Commandments in school and other things that were in some way related to God, they were, I think, right around that time is when they began to be removed. And around the same time, I think, is when an ideological movement within academia began to insert itself into the classrooms in grammar schools, middle schools, high schools, where teachers who had been trained in the years prior in colleges and universities came into the classroom as new teachers with these newfangled ideas. And the pedagogy was changing, and it was moving away from things like the three R's and more in favor of some of these ideological issues taking root. So I remember, in grammar school, beginning to see some of that stuff. I didn't understand it at the time. It didn't make any sense to me what was going on, but I look back on it, and I'm aware of it. So my impression, Cindy, in a very imprecise sort of way, is I think this was a gradual flooding of the classrooms little by little over time to the point where the pendulum swung so far in that direction that it seemed normal, and that teachers and children, certainly in the last 30 years or so, have become accustomed or acclimatized to that kind of atmosphere in the classroom. And what would be shocking and even horrifying would be the very notion of, let's say, let's teach something about the Ten Commandments, or let's teach something about traditional families, mom, dad, and the kids. I mean, those are things that are now considered shocking and outlandish and impermissible. But I think it's a gradual process that solidified probably about 30 years ago. That's my guess based upon what I've seen. But I'd have to leave it to the experts to give you something more specific.
Wow. It's just been so scary. Thank you.
Yeah, but, you know, at least we have the tools to push back against it. Thank God for relevant radio, right? I mean, you're not going to hear this kind of a conversation on CNN, are you?
Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Patrick.
So we do the best we can. You're welcome.
Continuing to just a voice for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Cindy. Yeah, my point is not to get people depressed, but to maybe get you a bit riled. Is that a good word? I think it might be a good word for that. I want you to be aware of these things, not so that I can make you depressed, but so that you can, being aware of them, do something about it. Like an earlier caller said today, if you have children in school, you really should be at these parent-teacher meetings. You really should be at the school board meetings, because you have a vested interest in what goes on in those classrooms. And if, as mom or dad, you're not taking at least a role, an active role in the oversight of what your children are learning, then don't be surprised if when they graduate from high school, you've got a high-functioning atheist on your hands who may even be transgender at that point. And who knows what else? So these things should not surprise you, and they won't surprise you if you are active and vigilant early on and you're making a good faith effort to try to protect your children from these ideologies. Now, for some parents, the only solution for them is the public schools. And I understand that. Not everybody has the option to send a child to a Catholic school. Some do. If you can, great. But even some Catholic schools suffer from this rampant ideology. So be careful there as well. Don't just assume that because it's got the name Catholic in the title that it will therefore be as pure as the wind-driven snow. You have to be careful there too. Some parents have made the decision to homeschool, and COVID sort of helped that along. Lots of families who never thought they would be homeschooling families last year discovered, wait a minute, we're homeschooling now. We never planned for this. And a goodly number of them liked it. And they found out this is actually pretty cool. This actually works rather well, and we like this, and we're going to stick with this. So that's another option. But whatever your option is, whatever you wind up doing with your children, please don't be lackadaisical about oversight regarding what they're learning, what they're being taught, or better, what they're being indoctrinated with in many cases. Be vigilant. 888-914-9149. We're going out to Teresa in Philadelphia. Hi, Teresa.
Hi. My comment is an article that my sister referred me to last week in The Federalist, and it relates to this LGBTQ ideology that's being promoted. The point of this author's article in The Federalist was that a large motivation of this ideology is ultimately to legitimize pedophilia. And he cited articles and interviews and also the video on YouTube of the gay men's choir, San Francisco gay men's choir, that mm-hmm. this is the end game to legitimize pedophilia. If you can choose your gender, then the next logical step is, can't you choose, you know, if you're a 14 or 13 year old, can't you choose whom you have sex with? And shouldn't that be okay? Because mm-hmm. we tolerate everything. So as a yeah. Catholic, I know we're supposed to have hope, but to me, this seems like the final brick in civilization. So
there's an organization called NAMBLA. Have you ever heard of that organization before? NAMBLA.
Yeah.
It's an acronym. And I'm not going to say on the radio what it stands for, but it's an organization that's been around for, I don't know, 30, 40 years maybe, at least 30. And its sole purpose is to accomplish what you're referring to, which is to lower or, if possible, even eliminate the age of consent laws so that children can become easier prey, and the men who are preying upon them will not be arrested for a crime. So the whole point of that organization, and they're funded, they receive donations, and they have conferences, etc. And the whole point is to do that. Let's eliminate, if possible, any remaining vestiges of protection for children, so that adults can prey upon them sexually. That's the point we've gotten to. And that organization is tolerated and permitted to be in existence, which boggles right. my mind.
So my fear is, I don't have grandchildren yet, but my young 20-something children have bought into the ideology of tolerate everything, which in my mind means stand up for nothing.
Right.
And when they have children, my instinct is going to be take them to Antarctica or jump on one of these lunar trips and raise them there, because where do we go?
Yeah. There is no... Cyrus, let's see if we can find that Ronald Reagan quote, you know, the audio. The last greatest stand, United States is the last greatest stand. There's nowhere else to go, Ronald Reagan said. And he said it way better than I can. But so rather than leave this on a downer note, Teresa, I think the takeaway from our conversation is, parents, do your job. Be vigilant. Sacrifice as necessary to protect your children. And if it means some changes in your family lifestyle, so be it. Because wouldn't you rather make a few adjustments that might be difficult or maybe a little tedious at first, but you have children who are intact and not ravaged by the ideologies that are running amok right now when they get out of high school? Wouldn't you rather have that than to have maybe not done a few of the difficult things in the here and now, only to have a high-functioning atheist transgender son or daughter, or sons and daughters, when the time comes when they graduate from high school. And I'm not saying that would happen to every parent's child, but many of them, we're seeing it more and more now, many of them are turning in that direction. So, okay, let's play it. Thank you, Teresa. Here's Ronald Reagan.
We're at war with the most dangerous enemy that has ever faced mankind in his long climb from the swamp to the stars. And it's been said if we lose that war, and in so doing lose this way of freedom of ours, history will record with the greatest astonishment that those who had the most to lose did the least to prevent its happening. Well, I think it's time we ask ourselves if we still know the freedoms that were intended for us by the Founding Fathers. Not too long ago, two friends of mine were talking to a Cuban refugee, a businessman who had escaped from Castro. And in the midst of his story, one of my friends turned to the other and said, "We don't know how lucky we are." And the Cuban stopped and said, "How lucky you are. I had some place to escape to." And in that sentence, he told us the entire story. If we lose freedom here, there's no place to escape to. This is the last stand on earth.
I'll be right back.
No, 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 no.